So we've all probably been there, right? We've been in a messy situation and we've just made it messier. Well, we're going to look at this tonight. Before we do that, man, it's really exciting to have you here tonight. My name's Kurt, if we haven't had a chance to meet. And I know you already heard about this stuff. I want to mention it again in case anybody walked in or you're listening on the podcast. Next weekend, no early weekend service, so don't come on Thursday. We're going to be here Sunday only, 9:30 and 11, and breakfast food trucks. So it's going to be awesome, awesome weekend. We hope you'll plan to be here. And as Chris said, we're kicking off this brand new series called Spark, Ideas That Ignite Change. And, you know, everybody's got a story about Ann, right? I mean, Ann Smith's going to be here. As Chris said, you're not going to want to miss her. One of the reasons she is the favorite speaker ever here at Crosspoint is because she just has an ability to breathe life into us. In fact, every time I talk to her, every time I run into her, whether it's in person or on the phone, the very first thing she says to me, she says, Curtis, because that's what she calls me, Curtis, can I tell you everything that I've been learning lately? And I'm like, when I am 92, I want to live that way. Like, I want to be constantly, you know, talking about the things that I'm doing new for the first time. So you are not going to want to miss next weekend. It's going to be an awesome, awesome weekend as we kick off Spark. And Ann's going to just be phenomenal. Well, hey, tonight we are wrapping up the series, Me and My Hot Mess. And here's the question. How many of you have ever made a mess messier? Just out of curiosity. Yeah, and you're lying if you don't have your hands up. All right, you know, meaning, you know, you've been in a big mess and all of a sudden, in trying to clean it up, you actually made it worse, right? A mess that I think about when I'm in this building, I've shared this before, some of you have heard it, but it's kind of like the one that I'll always remember here. Back, I don't know, Christmas time, one of my friends dropped off 4 bottles of wine in my office in a bag. It was part of a fundraiser deal. He's like, oh, just leave these for Kurt. I left them there for a few weeks. Right after Christmas, I thought, man, I had to take those home. I grabbed the gift bag, started to walk, and the bottom fell out of it. 2 bottles of red wine burst all over my office floor. I mean, it was a mess, there was a puddle, and of course, you know, I was upset at the moment, and I wasn't like, Kurt, why in the world did you do that? I was like, why didn't you drink those sooner? That would have been so much better. But I, you know, it was a mess, and it was probably a 6-8 foot, you know, puddle of wine that was creeping out. I grabbed a mop, and I started trying to mop it up, and have you ever been trying to clean something up, but you feel like you're making it worse? Like, the wine just keeps going further. It's going under the baseboards, right? And so I'm, like, texting my assistant. I'm texting our building manager. I'm like, guys, it's going to smell like wine in here tomorrow. Nobody's been drinking in my office, but there's wine everywhere. And so they did an amazing job, picked it up, cleaned it up. Somewhat of a humorous story, and probably everybody has one, right, where we've made a mess of something, and then we made it messier. But, you know, when it comes to our finances and all of a sudden we're in a mess and we make it messier, or we're, you know, in our marriage or relationship and all of a sudden the mess that we're in, we try to maybe help things and it gets messier. Or maybe our academic life, whatever it might be. I mean, I could go on and on and on. When you're in a mess and you make it messier, I mean, it just keeps getting messier and messier. And the reason that when we're in a mess, things tend to get messier, and this is kind of what we're going to talk about tonight. And if you're not a church person, by the way, first, we're super excited you're here, but this really applies to all of us. So it doesn't really matter where you are in your spiritual journey. Every mess that you make, you know, whether you married a mess or you dated your way into a mess or you know, spent your way into a mess, whatever it might be, every mess comes with a number of bad options once you're in it, right? I mean, once you're in the messy situation, there's always some bad options, like borrow more, right? Lie, cover it up, tell a bigger story. I mean, whatever it might be, destroy the evidence. I mean, whenever we get ourselves in a mess, there's always, you know, not a lot of good options that will just make it messier. And so tonight I want us to look at how, when we find ourselves in that mess, how do we not make it messier? And because some messes are unavoidable, right? And other messes we make for ourselves. In fact, many of our messes we make for ourselves. And, you know, whether it's financial or academically or professionally, whatever it might be. And there are just some really bad options when we get there that we begin to reach for that are only going to make things messier. So I want to kind of tell you one of my favorite stories tonight. This comes out of the Old Testament part of the Bible. It's actually found in like 1 Samuel 18 to 24. It's the story of David. And if you grew up in church, you probably are familiar with this story, and you're going to be tempted to just like go right to the end of the story because you know how it ends. I hope you can kind of just track with us tonight. This story takes place about 1000 BC, and this is before David becomes king. All right, so David's a boy at the time, and the prophet Samuel, he actually goes to the house of Jesse. David's father says, I am going to anoint the next king of the nation of Israel from your home, Jesse. And so he looks at all David's brothers, these big strapping young men, and God says, nope, it's not him, it's not him, not, it's not him. He goes on down the line. All of a sudden, he gets to little shepherd boy David, who's maybe 12, 13 years old, and he says, this is the one. And so Samuel anoints David the next king of the nation of Israel. Now, the problem, though, was that Israel already had a king. And so now we have two kings in the nation of Israel. And so David is still just a boy, so he just kind of goes back out into the field and takes care of his sheep. But before too long, he ends up getting another kind of request. His dad says, hey, I've got a job for you. I want you to take lunch to your brothers who are out fighting for the nation of Israel on the front line. So David takes a brown bag lunch out to his brothers. And when he gets there to the front lines, they're fighting in the army, he sees this giant of a man by the name of Goliath, who the nation of Israel is in a standoff with. And he sees this man, nobody's fighting him. And he says, well, why wouldn't I be able to take down this giant? I mean, when I'm out protecting my sheep, I fend off lions, tigers, and bears. Oh my word, you guys are on it tonight. And so he's like, why would I, if I can take them down, why would I not be able to take down this giant? And he does, he kills the giant. And overnight, David becomes this like sensation. I mean, everybody's like, whoa, did you see that? The whole army watches David, this young teenage boy, take down this giant of a man. The ladies are swooning over him. They're like, David kills the men by the tens of thousands. Saul, King Saul, only kills them by the thousands. And so David's popularity is going up, 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 and Saul is getting very, very jealous in the process. And so here's what Samuel writes about at this point in the story about David. He says, in everything that he did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. When Saul saw how successful he was afraid of him, but all Israel and Judah loved David because he led them in their campaigns, in their military campaigns. So King Saul, the current reigning king of the nation of Israel, has a problem on his hands. He's got to decide, okay, what am I going to do? So he decides, I'm going to try to control David. And he does this through one of his daughters. He says, I'm going to try to get David to marry one of my daughters, and hopefully I can kind of control him through my daughters. He's going to use his daughter to control David. So he goes to David, says, David, I would love if you would accept the hand of my daughter in marriage, and I would become your father-in-law. And David, he goes, oh my gosh, it's like an incredible compliment that you want me to join your family, but I'm just a lowly shepherd boy. I mean, there's no way that I could join your family. I mean, I am not worthy of that. And of course, people get word of this, and they're like, oh my gosh, not only is he a great warrior, but he's humble, right? David the humble. And so everybody's just totally wowed by David because he actually turned down an opportunity to become a part of the king's family. Well, David just continues to gain more and more popularity. Saul continues to become more and more jealous. And what do you know? One day, David actually kind of falls in love with another one of King Saul's daughters, a different daughter. Her name was Michelle. And so he says, you know, King Saul's like, let me try this again. So he goes to David. He said, David, I'd like to offer, you know, my daughter's hand in marriage to you. And this time David's like, oh my gosh, I'd love that. I'm going to accept that. And so Saul says, great, great. Now here's going to be the bride price for taking my daughter in marriage. It's not going to be a lump of money. It's not going to be like sheep or cattle or anything that is the normal bride price. But I want you, in order to accept my daughter's hand in marriage, to go out and kill 100 Philistines, and I want you to bring back some evidence that you killed them. And so, you know, you got to basically go out and kill 100 of our enemies and bring back some evidence. And you're going to learn about the evidence in just a moment. And so, you know, Saul's thinking, David's never going to be able to do this. I mean, he's going to go out. The Philistines are just going to, they're going to take him down. I'm not even going to have to deal with him anymore. And David's got this like ragtag band of men that kind of have kind of gathered around him. And he's like, there's no way they're going to be able to take down the Philistines. Well, here's what David decides to do instead. It says, David arose and he went along with his men And he killed not 100, but 200 of the Philistines. And David brought their foreskins. Foreskins. You don't hear that word very often anymore, do you? You don't even hear that in church, forever. Just turn to your neighbor and go, foreskins. Just say foreskins. Just say it out loud. Just, you know, get it out. You know, it's a Bible word. It's in the Bible. We talk about Bible words here at Cross Point. I don't know which is weirder, all right? That he was required to kill 200 Philistines, two hundred of his enemies, or that he had to take off 200 foreskins and bag them up and go count them out for his father-in-law. I mean, both of those are pretty weird, right? But nonetheless, this is what he had to do to get King Saul's daughter's hand in marriage. Well, he does it. It makes it even worse for Saul. In fact, here's what Samuel tells us next. When Saul realized that the Lord is with David and that his daughter Michelle loved David, which means Saul was not going to be able to control him through her because she was more committed to David than she was to her father, Saul became still more afraid of him and he remained his enemy the rest of his days. Now here's where the connection between this story and our series, Me and My Mess, happens right here. David has a big mess on his hands right here, right? And it's not his fault. I mean, for the most part, none of this is his fault. I mean, it's not like messes you and I make where we create them for ourselves. Like, this is outside of himself for the most part. He didn't mean to be asked to be king. I mean, he had nothing to do with that. I mean, the whole Goliath thing, like, he was just serving his country. He's like, man, I'll step in. And then, you know, this whole leading the campaigns and these women swooning over him, he kills people by the tens of thousands. Like, that was just him trying to serve. And then, like, he rejects the hand of, you know, Saul's first daughter, and people are like, oh my gosh, this dude's humble. I mean, none of this is his fault, and yet no matter what he does, it gets worse and worse. And then one afternoon, Saul completely loses it. He takes a javelin, and he throws it at David as David is playing his harp. David ducks. Saul throws another one at him. David ducks again. David's like, oh my gosh, I think he's trying to kill me. He flees the palace. You know, he's pretty smart, even at a young age. He flees the palace. He runs out into the wilderness. At this point, David is on the run. All right, Saul has it in for him. He was jealous of David. He wanted his son Jonathan, to be the next king. And that's not the way it's going. And so when David leaves the city and the palace and goes out into the wilderness, he's basically out trying to hide. He's on the run. He's an outlaw. And he begins to gather this group of people around him, a bunch of misfits, a bunch of the political enemies of King Saul. King Saul had a whole bunch of political enemies. He begins to gather this group of men and women, and David is an outlaw, and he gathers this band of merry men and merry women around him. In fact, it even says everywhere he went, there was like a village of people that went with him. But Saul had not lost his desire to kill David. Now, this is where the story gets really interesting, right? Now we're up to 1 Samuel chapter 24. It says, after Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told David is in the desert of En-Gedi. And so Saul, who's the reigning king at the moment, he's out fighting the Philistines. And the Philistines are kind of like the Klingons. Remember the Klingons? Like, they just never go away, right? Like, they're in this perpetual ongoing battle, right, with the Philistines in Israel. So Saul is returning from a campaign where he's been out fighting the Philistines, and his men are bloodied, they're tired, they're hungry, they lost some of their friends in battle, all right, they're ready to go home, and somebody gallops up to Saul and says, hey, Saul, guess what? We just located David, and we think we have him cornered. And here's what the text says. It says, so Saul took 3,000 able young men from all Israel and set out to look for David and his men near the crags of the wild goats. Now, this was like a large spring in this area, this territory where they were fighting. In fact, this is what it looked like right here. You got a spring, but then you got like caves and kind of mountainous terrain around it. And then it says he came, meaning Saul came and his men, to the sheep pens along the way. A cave was there, and Saul went in, get this, to relieve himself. Now, we believe this is like the only reference to people going to the bathroom in the Bible right here, all right? And the reason that I'm mentioning it tonight is because I just thought there might be some of you who have junior high boys in your home, and you're going, is there like just one Bible passage that would keep the attention of my boys? This might be it right here, all right? So 1 Samuel 24, Here's the situation. Saul and his men, they're going along, all right? Saul has to go to the bathroom, all right? His 3,000 men that are with him, his army, he tells them to just pause, just wait right here in the valley. Saul gets off of his mule. He walks up, up, up the path. He finds a cave. He walks into the cave while his army waits patiently below. And get this, David and his men, they are in the cave. They're scattered among the caves right here in this valley. See, here's what happened. David, when they were coming into this valley, some of his men said, "Oh my gosh, Saul's army is coming. And instead of us all retreating together, we ought to, you know, kind of disperse, go up into the caves and hide. And then when Saul goes through, we'll then come out, sink back up, and go the other way." And so, get this, this is like so unbelievable right here. David and his closest men are hiding in the very cave that Saul chooses to go up and take a sit on the can in. All right? So Saul goes up to relieve himself. I mean, seriously, what are the odds of this? Just think about this for a moment. What are the odds of this? If ever you could see God's hand in a moment, all right, you could see God's hand, like bringing Saul to David right here, right? And so David's men, this is what they say. It says, "The men said, 'This is the day the Lord spoke of when he said to you, I will give you your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish.'" And what they're referring to right here is, see, David, he and his men traveled all around, and every single night they would gather around a campfire together. And these were men who were poor. These were men who didn't have any place to lay their head. I mean, these were like outlaws. These were men who came from different cities all around Judea. I mean, this is like a very dangerous lifestyle they were leading. And David would simply say to them, he'd say, hey, just be patient with me. Stick with me. I mean, someday I'm going to become the king of this nation. If you stick with me, when I become king, I will reward me. I mean, I just have faith that God one day is going to honor his word on me becoming the king. And so in this moment, these men are like, "Are you kidding me? David, this is the moment right here. I mean, God just delivered Saul. This is the moment you've been waiting for. Like, God orchestrated this whole event right here." And David, he gets caught up in the emotion of it all. And so, and how couldn't you, right? Like he's on the run. He's been, like, he's King Saul wants him for his life, right? He's now an outlaw. And now your enemy, the guy who's trying to kill you, just walked into the dark cave that you are hiding in, and he's sitting there in one of the most vulnerable positions known to man. I mean, what could be like more of a God thing, right? And so David, he gets caught up in this moment. He's like, "I'm just going to do unto him as Saul intends to do unto me." I mean, nobody would blame him, right? I mean, if David takes him out right there, like, everybody's going to be like, "Well, that was justified. I mean, Saul's trying to kill you. I mean, you could even claim self-defense." So David's like, I'm just going to do unto him what Saul intends to do unto me." Now, let me just pause here for a moment in the midst of the story. Then we're going to get back to this. And if you kind of checked out or you just like were daydreaming for a moment, like, just hone back in here for just a moment, right? This is really important. The root of most messes, most of the messes that you and I make, I mean, and sometimes the ones that we don't make, but the root of most of the ones we make, somewhere in there is a breakdown in virtue. Meaning, the messes we create, the messes we dated our way into, the messes we married our way into, the messes we gambled our way into, the messes we spent our way into, the messes we drunk our way into, whatever it might be, somewhere in that story is likely a breakdown of virtue. Now, virtue is character. Virtue is integrity. Virtue is self-confidence. Virtue is patience. Virtue is self-discipline. All right, and when you look beneath the veneer of nearly every mess that you and I have ever experienced in our life, somewhere in there is a breakdown in virtue. I mean, somewhere in there, eventually, if you ignore virtue, I mean, it's like cause and effect. If you ignore virtue in your relationships, or if you ignore virtue in your finances, whatever it might be, eventually you're going to make a mess. And you don't clean up a mess that was created by a failure of virtue with another failure of virtue, right? You don't clean up like a flood with more water, right? I mean, you don't, like, two wrongs don't make a right. And so the problem here, we stated this at the beginning, the problem is every mess usually has some pretty bad options. And those bad options usually include something that could be chalked up to a failure of virtue. And we're tempted to reach for it, right? Because usually it looks like a quick fix. I mean, if I just borrow more money, Or if I just lie and tell another story and then another story and then another story. Or if I just, you know, if I could just, you know, like cover the evidence. But you don't clean up a mess, like a failure of virtue moment, with another failure of virtue. But that's what David was about to do right here. And so the text, it tells us, is that David crept up unnoticed. Now understand, David was a warrior, right? So he's a fighter. I mean, he's stealth. I mean, this is his wheelhouse right here. Like, this is his sweet spot. I mean, David could creep up on King Saul. King Saul's eyes had not adjusted to the dark cave. David had been in there. All David had to do was creep up quietly, grab Saul's hair, and off with his head. Saul wouldn't even know what hit him. And as David is creeping up to Saul unnoticed, it said he was stealth like a cat in one translation. As David's creeping up on Saul, all of a sudden something dawns on him. And he begins to realize, he's like, oh my gosh, I'm about to make this mess that I'm in a lot messier. In fact, I'm about to murder my king. I'm about to murder like God's chosen king for the nation of Israel, at least today. I'm about to like murder my father-in-law. I mean, I'm about to murder my wife's dad, which is my kid's grandpa. I mean, all of a sudden he's like, what am I doing? What in the world am I about to do? And see, he realized if I murder the king right here, this is going to be a permanent part of my story for the rest of my life. Now see, this is where we get trapped, right? I mean, you apply this to your context. This is where we get trapped. You know, think about it. Was he justified to kill the king? Most people would be like, well, yeah. I mean, the king's trying to kill you. I mean, you probably should kill him if you have the chance. I mean, was this what everybody expected him to do? I don't think anybody would have questioned David killing the king. But was this the virtuous thing to do? Absolutely not. But see, David's about to add to his story a chapter that will stick with him for the rest of his life. I mean, think about it. Grandpa, tell me, can you tell us again, like, how did you become the king in the nation of Israel? Well, kids, you know, your great-grandpa, I mean, he just walked in the cave and he got ready to take a, whatever they called it back like 1,000 years B.C. You know, he's going to sit on the throne. And all of a sudden, like, his eyes hadn't adjusted. I just grabbed his hair and slit his neck, and I became the king. And they're like, Grandpa, you're so brave. I mean, imagine the stories. David, could you tell me again exactly what happened to my father? Well, honey, we're not exactly sure. I mean, we walked, you know, we kind of like came across a cave, and it was just a random thing. I mean, all of a sudden we walk in, and there's your dad with his throat slit. We really don't know. See, David's just about to add a chapter to his story that he'll regret the rest of his life. And it was probably justified. And Saul maybe even deserved it. But there you go. There's our tension right there. Every mess comes with some really, really bad options. So David crept up unnoticed, and he cut off a corner. Get this, a corner of Saul's robe. And David's men in the back of the cave, they can't believe this. They're watching him. He's going right up. Saul took his robe off to use the restroom. You can't, you know, go to the bathroom in your robe. So he laid it down next to him. David goes right up next to Saul, cuts a corner of his robe off, and then slides back to the back of the cave and blends back into the darkness. It says afterward, David was conscience stricken for having cut off a corner of his robe. This bothered David's conscience. You know why? Because any attack on a king or a king's possessions was an act against the king. So even something inanimate, when he cut the corner of the robe, that was like an act of aggression against the king. He said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, or lay my hand on him, for he is the anointed of the Lord." I mean, he's like, guys, I just about forgot. God put King Saul in place, and who am I? It's not my business to replace what God put in place. I mean, I didn't come along to replace what God put in place. I don't want to murder the king in order to become the king. And when he said this, all of his men were like, well, David, that's fine for you, but man, let us at him. I mean, we don't mind having David's, like, you know, Saul's blood on our hands. We'll take care of him for you. But look at what David says. It says, with these words, David sharply rebuked his men and did not allow them to attack Saul. And Saul left the cave and went his way. Now, as if this isn't like exciting enough already, take a look at this next turn in the story. Picture this. Saul's army. Remember, there's 3,000 of them, right? They're standing out in the hot sun, right? I mean, Saul, you know, they're waiting to head back to camp. I mean, he got off his mule. He had to use the restroom. He walked up the hill into the cave, all right? And the average man spends approximately 14 minutes, plus or minus, in the restroom every day, according to the Daily Mail. All right, so about 14 minutes later, King Saul, he emerges from the cave, all right? He's got his cloak on. He walks down the mountainside, and he jumps on his mule. He's about to pull away with his 3,000 men, and guess who appears up in the mouth of the cave? King David. He's standing up there going, yoo-hoo, waving the little corner of the cloak, yoo-hoo. And everybody turns at him. Now, I don't know if he actually did the yoo-hoo thing or not, but he got everybody's attention. Everybody looks back up at him, and here's what it says. It says, then David went out of the cave and called out to Saul. Everybody looks up. Saul's older. His eyes are adjusting back to the light. He says to his young companion, hey, is that who I think it is up there? And his companion says, yes, your highness, that's your son-in-law. That's David. And everybody in that moment, everybody in Saul's army knew exactly what had just taken place. Now, how crazy is this? Can you imagine? And so Samuel tells us what happens next. David gives this little speech. He says, this day you have seen with your own eyes how the Lord delivered you into my hands in the cave. Some urged me to kill you, but I spared you. In fact, not only did I not kill you, but I kept my men from killing you. I mean, I could have been off with your head right there. I mean, if you think I'm out here to like take over for you, I could have done it. You probably deserve it. Saul, I did for you what your bodyguards didn't even do for you. Your bodyguards are standing outside the cave down in the valley. I had every opportunity, but guess what? I protected you. I protected you. I said, I will not lay my hand on the Lord because he's the Lord's anointed. Now, he may not be acting like the Lord's anointed, and he may be a sorry excuse of the Lord's anointed, but David's like, you know what? I'm not going to replace what God has put in place. And then this next thing he says, some of you may need to kind of lock and load on this next phrase right here, verse 12. He says, may the Lord judge between you and me. He says, I'm not the judge. But may the Lord judge between you and me, and may the Lord avenge the wrongs you have done to me, because you've certainly wronged me, Saul. I mean, Saul, you've totally done an in-run on me. I mean, make no mistake about it, but my hand will not touch you. And people are watching this. The army's watching this, and they're like, oh, my word, who is this warrior? And respect for David just skyrockets. See, here's what he's saying. David's saying, I did for you what you never intended to do to me. You would have taken my life in a heartbeat, but guess what? I protected you. And not only did I protect you, but I wasn't about to take you out of your role. I wasn't about to take you out of place, what God put you in the place of. I'm not going to do that to you. I'm going to honor that. I took a road that was higher than most people can even see, let alone walk, Saul. I protected you when you're trying to kill me. And what's Saul to do? I mean, he's humiliated, right? And his bodyguards are humiliated. They realize, man, they dropped the ball. They're supposed to be by him all the time. They let him go into the bathroom, and he could have been off with his head right at that moment. But David's the one that protected him. And they're like, we've never seen anything like this. I mean, Saul was like prepared for David to be like crowned king by the army right in that moment. I mean, this is like completely unheard of in a world of bloodshed where death came easy and life was cheap. And Saul, he turns and he says to David, he says, it's evident that you're much more of a man than I am. And he turned and he walked away and he went back to Jerusalem. And if you flip over in your Bible seven chapters, you'll see that seven chapters later, a single arrow through Saul's armor killed him. And in that moment, David was elected the king. Every mess comes with a prepackaged set of bad options. Every mess. And when you choose that bad option, when I choose that bad option, guess what? It just makes things messier. And see, this is why this is so important. For those of us that are older, those of us who maybe have a few more years under our belt, you see this immediately. For those of you who are younger, all right, this is going to help you so much. But eventually the mess that you might be experiencing right now, see, eventually the mess that you're experiencing, it's going to be reduced down to like one or two sentences. I know it's hard to believe, but whatever mess you're in right now, and whatever you're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm never going to get out of this. There's not a way out of this. I don't see any way that things could get any better. I don't see how things are ever going to turn my way. away. Just understand that, you know, just give it a little time. I mean, like 5 years from now, you might go, you know, 5 years ago, I went through a divorce. And everything that was about that divorce, I mean, everything you experienced and all the pain and the turmoil and the friends and the difficulty and the awkwardness, you know, 5 years later, you're like, yeah, 5 years ago, I went through a divorce. It's reduced down to like one or two sentences. You know, 4 years ago, I declared bankruptcy. I mean, all that you went through when you were dealing with the mess of finances and bad business decisions, or maybe, you know, somebody did an end run on you, whatever the circumstances, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road, it's just gonna be, well, yeah, 4 years ago, I went through a bankruptcy. 6 months ago, my wife found out I was having an affair on her. 9 months ago, I found out my wife is having an affair on me. 2 years ago, I mean, I just, you know, I had to drop out of school. I mean, it's just amazing how when we give it a little time, whatever the mess is we're in, these giant life events seem to be reduced to just one or two sentences, which tells us that our response to the mess is what defines us, not the mess. So, I mean, if you're in a mess right now, understand the mess is not going to define you. It's how you respond to it. That's the real story in the mess. All right, you can't unscramble eggs. You can't undo history. But your response to the mess is going to be what becomes a part of your permanent story that's being written in your life. Which brings us to the question. See, somewhere in the midst of the story, it dawned on David, between King Saul and David's mighty men. I mean, he had to deal with the question, what's the story that I want to tell? What's the story out of this really messy situation? What's the story that I want to tell? In fact, this is one of our next steps. If you take out your connection cards, on the back side, we give you connection cards every week. And I want you to think about this. If you're in a mess right now, I want you to kind of decide tonight, what story do I want to be able to tell out of the situation that I'm in right now? David, how'd you become the king of the nation of Israel? What story do you want to tell, David? I mean, you know what David could say? He could say, you know, I did what no one else really thought of doing. I mean, I did what nobody expected me to do. I mean, I didn't just do with, you know, what I could get by with. I mean, it went way beyond that. I opted for virtue over, you know, whatever just was, you know, kind of a quick fix for the moment. In fact, I didn't even see. I mean, I felt like God was wanting me to do things that everybody was telling me not to do. And yet, I just trusted my Heavenly Father that if I followed Him, that He would handle the mess. And one of the reasons I have so much energy on this is I just want us to see as we wrap this series up, I don't want any of us adding any more water to the flood that we might be in right now. Right? Don't choose an option. There's a lot of bad options. Don't choose an option in the midst of a mess that's going to make you a liar for life. Right? Like, you know, that moment when your wife confronts you and you knew that you were going to get found out. And you did. You know, and you have options. What do? We make up a story after a story after a story. You know, when you get caught or when we get busted or whatever it might be, we have a decision to make right there. What kind of story are we going to tell? We're not defined by the mess. We're defined. What goes kind of in our permanent story is how we respond to the mess. And let me just say something to students. I know we've got some students in the room. If you're a student, you know, high school student, college student, just please, 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 please listen to this real carefully. If you're a student, don't use someone else's bad behavior as an excuse to behave badly. See, this was David's story. I mean, Saul's behaving terribly, right? And he easily could have been like, well, man, if this is how Saul's going to act, I have every right to do what, you know, A, B, and C. Don't let somebody else's bad behavior, you know, be an excuse to behave badly. Meaning, some of your students, like, you're in really difficult situations in your home. Mom and dad are behaving badly. And as a high school junior, a senior, as a college student, you know, you begin to kind of become an advocate. You kind of get just upset by it. And you're like, oh my gosh, if my parents are going to act this way, then I'm justified to do whatever I want to do. Well, just you're going to make things messier if you do that. Right? Don't use someone else's bad behavior as an excuse to behave badly. And see, here's the other thing. If you're a Christian, and if you're not a Christian, listen, all of this applies. I mean, this isn't like just for those who are followers of Jesus or not. I mean, this applies to all of us. We all get ourselves in messy situations, and we have a lot of bad options that can make them messier. And so maybe, you know, as a result of being here, you're like, man, I'm seeing that God will meet me in my mess, or maybe you don't want anything to do with God. I don't know. We just hope you come back next week. We're glad you're here. But if you're a Christian, understand, this is why Jesus says, follow me. Rarely does he just fix it. I mean, so many times we want him to fix it. We want the immediate fix. He doesn't usually fix things. He says, I just want you to follow me out. I want you to follow me out. I'm going to guide you. We're going to dodge some things as we go. And you might, you know, hear some nudgings from him, and your friends might go, I can't believe that's what you're saying to her. I can't believe that's what you're doing. He's going to tell you to maybe say things that you wouldn't normally say or do things you wouldn't normally do. But he says, just follow me. I'm going to leverage this. I'll use this. I mean, if you'll just follow me out of this, I'll redeem it. I mean, I'm going to lead you through it. It's not just going to be like that. I'm going to lead you through it, and you're going to grow as a result. And I tell you what, there's going to be some beautiful things that are going to come as a result if you'll just trust me and you'll follow me. Because see, your mess may be the context for the real story that God wants to write in your life. And so dads, you know, if dad's in the room, just look at me for a moment. I want you to ask yourself, what's the story I want to tell my son one day? And moms, I mean, what's the story that you want to tell your little girls one day? And students, college students, high school students, junior high students, you know, at some point somebody's going to say, man, what was your high school years like? What was college like? You know, and you're going to have messes. I mean, messes are going to come your way. But what's the story that you want to tell your kids one day? You want to tell your grandkids? If you will follow your Savior, you will not be defined by those messes, all right? There's going to be messes, but you will not be defined by them. God will write a redemptive story in your life. And he will turn those things, those messes, into beautiful things. He says, but you got to follow me. You got to trust me. And I think that's what we want, right? We want the beauty at the end of the mess, not like just another mess. So I want us to go ahead and stand, and there's a couple other next steps in your car. You can process through those. You know, maybe it's just saying, hey, what's the virtuous thing to do right here? Maybe it's just deciding tonight, man, you know, God, help me to know and kind of determine the story I want to tell. Because that may be helpful in me deciding what I'm going to do from this point forward. Let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, it is so much easier to talk about this stuff than it is to walk out of here and do it. I mean, it's so much easier. And so I just pray that, you know, you've brought some things to our mind. There's probably a flood of things going through our mind. In fact, some of us might even be going, oh my gosh, was Kurt like looking over my shoulder this week? How did he know? I didn't know. God, help us to understand that if you're kind of just bringing things to our mind, that's not me speaking to this crowd. That's you speaking to us, that you communicate with us. And so, Father, I just pray for every married man and married woman that's in the room right now. I pray over them that if they're thinking about reaching for that option that's just one that they're going to regret down the road, that you would give them the courage to resist that. And Father, for the single men and then the single young ladies and the students in the room, if it's maybe they're in a mess and they're thinking, oh my gosh, is it worth it? And they're contemplating reaching for one of those options that are just going to make things messier. God, I pray that you help them to understand what's the virtuous thing to do right here. And God, give us the courage to follow through on it, whatever that looks like, to follow you. You assure us, man, if we just will follow you, you'll help us navigate. You'll help us dodge some things. And so help us to know what to do with what we've heard. Help us to know what to do with what we're thinking about right now. And it's because of you and your power, Jesus, that we are able to know that you can take us through the mess and better days can be ahead. So I just pray that happens, Jesus. And I pray these things according to your character.